Hello, listeners.
Hi, listeners.
Ben and Barry here. And before we go any further, I think one of us, who is not me, needs to do, well, at least an explanation, if not an apology.
So, we have decided to do this together to try and come to some détente over our war of sporting words. Instigated, let it be reminded, by Ben, mentioning the poor performance of the Irish rugby team against Japan. And I may have retaliated with a list of things that have happened in history since Newcastle last won a domestic trophy. And rather than harping on their continued lack of silverware and their continued disappointment to the many fans like Ben who have had to suffer for a long, long time, and I realise I am really laying this on thick, we just want to, you know, lay down our arms and...
So, two things. Thing number one, we won an Intertoto Cup, which counts. Secondly, I think you're being very unfair to the Japanese rugby team, who played magnificently. Thirdly, that's not even the thing I was talking about, you apologising.
You only had two things.
Yeah, well, inflation.
What am I apologising for now?
Well, if you listen to last week's episode, ladies
and
gentlemen.
Oh yeah, I have an actual apology.
Yeah, you may have heard the raw footage of our podcast with Rob Mulholland about the World Tour's musical, which went on a lot. Had quite a lot of stops and starts, and I mean, I thought recording it in the middle when we were commentating on a YouTube video was borderline unlistenable.
Yeah.
But apparently, quite a lot of you enjoyed peeking behind the wizard's curtain.
Yeah, by accident, I uploaded the wrong file. It was up there for a few hours. Apparently, a load of you listened to it and enjoyed it. But for those of you who did, as someone suggested online, hopefully in 10 or 20 years, it'll be like those bootleg Beatles albums, and it'll be worth loads of money. But in the interim, we did upload the complete edited version, of which we hope you also enjoyed. But if you also like seeing what happens when we're doing things unedited, then, you know, you could visit patreon.com, chuck a few quid our way, and help us get towards our next goal of 40 subscribers on there, which will help fund us doing a live show. So you'll get the actual, real, in-person, fleshy experience. if that's not tantalising enough, what else could be?
Good lord, a fleshy experience. One other wee thing as well, if you want to help out the podcast, I know that you'll think 130 plus podcasts in yammering on about reviews is tedious and tiresome. And do you know what? It is. But all I'm going to say is it genuinely still helps us get noticed and gets us visible on all of the podcasting platforms. So if you've got a spare minute to just give us a cheeky little 5-star review on whatever platform you listen to, that is a genuinely helpful and cost-effective thing to do. If you want to get in touch with us, you can do so on Twitter, at Worstfoot. I'm at Ben Vanderveld. He's at Baz McStay. And you can email us on worstfootforwardpodcast@gmail.com.
Lovely. We also have a website, worstfootforwardpodcast.com, where all of our previous episodes are. And we've got a really fun couple of, like, suggested topics to come up with from some of our Patreon donors recently. Keep sending us, like, ideas for things you want to hear from us and bits and pieces. We're really enjoying the bits of chat we've had on Twitter lately.
Mm-hmm.
Keep up the conversation, guys, particularly as the long winter nights draw in. We get lonely, oh so lonely. Anyway, settle down, enjoy this week's episode. Settle down, you at the back, and enjoy this week's episode all about the world's worst football teams.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Worst Foot Forward, the podcast where each week we celebrate the best of the worst. I'm Ben Vanderveld, and this week you join me in the dugout as we prepare for our five-a-side football team's playoff. That football team, by the way, is Worst Two-Foot Tackle Forward Wanderers. They're kitted out in their own vomit yellow strips, each of which is adorned with the logos for the Hitler Youth, Khmer Rouge, the Golden Dawn, several Japanese concubine shrines, and is sponsored by a gay conversion therapy clinic which works by attaching car batteries to people's nipples powered by burning seal pups. The fans are already assembled on the terraces chanting a rousing medley of "Tops off if you love climate change," their favourite old black and white minstrel tunes, and several Nickelback covers, whilst our team is made up of 17 midfield hatchet men and a goalkeeper we stole from a Canadian prison's ice hockey team, set up in a pretty angry 6-6-6 formation. And opposite me is the slyly twisted nipple to my sporting pre-match handshake from Vinnie Jones, Barry McStay.
We should start a five-a-side team.
We should.
The two of us. And then, like, who do you reckon our best footballing guests would be?
Oh, God. I feel like Will Seaward, dressed up in full sort of, like, late 19th century finery.
Yeah.
Would be great.
As, like, as the goalkeeper.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. As the goalkeeper. We literally just mentioned him before we turned on the microphone. I feel like someone with a name like Francesco Di Carlo.
Yeah, it's an Italian, bit of an Italian ringer.
Yeah, he's got to be a playmaker.
Yeah. Well, let's introduce our guest. When I say the words Icelandic comedian, you may think I'm conjuring up a vivid oxymoron like dry white wine or American intelligence. But go on, in your heads now, imagine what Iceland's biggest comedian looks like. You're right! Our guest this week is exactly that guy. Thankfully born and raised in Reykjavik, because I'm not sure I could have pronounced literally anywhere else in Iceland, he has done numerous TV specials, sold out the National Theatre for months on end, mixed comedy and classical music with the Icelandic National Symphony, performed with comedians like Bill Burr and Ed Byrne, appeared on BBC radio and television, and blown the roof off venues on bills from Montreux to Melbourne. He's had a couple of sellout runs at the Soho Theatre in London and is recording with us because he's here again with a new show, Eagle Fire Iron, the Icelandic version of Rock, Paper, Scissors, I presume. Performing in English and Icelandic, he's examined subjects like his former career as a flight attendant, fatherhood, and what it's like living in a country with the same population size as Coventry. He also, the internet tells me, is the brother of a distinguished composer, son of a distinguished children's author, and grandson of the very distinguished third president of Iceland. But again, Iceland has the same population size as Coventry, so everyone has a president for a grandson. Nevertheless, please welcome the pride of Iceland and the disappointment to his overachieving family, Ari Eldjarn.
Thank you, sir. What an introduction.
That's your CV. Yeah. Your granddad was president of Iceland.
Yeah, that is true. Yeah, fair enough.
Is the president a ceremonial role?
Kind of. Head of state, for sure. Only really comes into action if there is a bill that needs to be sent to referendum. Okay. Mostly shakes hands and cuts ribbons. Yeah.
Cool. Great. So if it's your granddad, it'll have been president in the 60s, 70s?
Yeah, 68 to 1980.
Three terms.
Wow, so he'll have met Nixon?
Oh, he most certainly did in 1973. And my grandmother would tell me later stories about this, like she danced with Nixon at like Bessastadir, the Icelandic White House, and he was like, oh, you remind me of my Pat.
Okay, so your granny had Nixon come on to her as maybe the best like niche bit of knowledge.
Yeah. And this is like 1973. This is a year after Watergate. Yeah. This is a year before he resigned. And apparently he was pretty happy when he came to visit,
because
he was just distracting himself from what was going on at home. Oh, this country is so genuine, and it's so humble and simple, and the food is beautiful, and the people are nice, and my career is going down the drain at this weekend.
It must have been so weird going to your granddad's house, because I remember going to my grandparents' house and I was like, oh, maybe I might get, you know, a Werther's original and a £5 note slipped into my hand, like, before I leave. Whereas
a copy of the Constitution.
Well, yeah, he had left office when I was born, and he did die when I was 1 year old, so this is
awesome.
I missed out on everything, all the good stuff.
But you've got, like, your granddad president, your dad seems like a really, like, popular children's writer and poet and stuff.
Yeah.
Then you and your brother are composers. There's a real, like, decline going on, if I may say so, in the family line.
It's that famous third generation, you know.
You're the difficult third album.
President, writer, comedian.
Yeah, so your children are going to be mime artists and homeless. So we've discovered already that you're from a very high achieving family, Ari, and you're fantastic at comedy, but what is it that you are worst at?
Well, a number of things I'm really, really bad at. One thing I'm very bad at is just like planning things. Mm-hmm. It is an Icelandic syndrome to me, not good at planning things, like not make preparations ahead of time. But I'm especially bad at planning something like writing a new comedy show. I will always just find something to obsess about instead of doing the actual work I have to do. And In 2017, I had a solo show. I had to write and perform, and it was like 10 shows, and it was coming up in 2 months. And I instead decided to go to a Goodwill store where I found a speaking Teddy Ruxpin bear. Now, this was a very rare Teddy Ruxpin from 1987 with an Icelandic cassette in it. Only 500 were made, and I dreamed of having one when I was six, but I never had one. And I found it, but it didn't work. So instead of writing my show, I Googled how to fix Teddy Ruxpin, which sent me down a massive hole on the internet where some madman on YouTube taught me, it's simple, you just screw these 59 screws, take the transistor out, make sure you don't electrocute yourself, get some lithium grease, put in a new rubber band for Teddy's lovely cassette player, and I was just fixing this, and at one point, Teddy Ruxpin had been completely disassembled, and my wife was saying, like, why are you doing this? You have to write a massively big solo show. And I said, but if Teddy Ruxpin can't sing and talk, how can I?
I hope when he finished putting him back together, you pressed play and Teddy Ruxpin went, you should write your comedy show.
Well, he did speak when I did press the button, and the tape had like a lot of wow and flutter, so it basically sounded like and I gave the Teddy to my my daughter, and I was like, aren't you happy? This is what I wanted when I was a kid. And she was like, yes, I'm happy, Daddy. And she listened to Teddy Ruxpin to go to sleep like for a few days, but then she just confided in me and said, I'm afraid of the bear.
I read about yo-yo clubs. Do you know what a yo-yo club is?
Yeah, they sort of like ping between the top division and the division below.
Yeah, they keep going up and down and up and down.
I'm just going to say it because it's early doors and it is correct to refer to them as that. Sunderland. Off you go.
Getting your Newcastle digs in early. I hope listeners enjoyed the intro to last week's episode as much as I enjoyed recording it.
Oh shit, I've still not listened to it.
Just some fun facts about stuff that's happened since Newcastle last won a domestic trophy.
Why would you do that?
Because the previous week you laid into the Ireland rugby team.
Because you lost to Japan.
Yeah, and I took that very seriously. Yeah, yo-yo clubs. The German for yo-yo club is Fahrstuhlmannschaft.
Of course it is.
Yeah.
Fahrstuhlmannschaft.
Yeah, it's an elevator team. The same sort of ideas used in Spain and in Russia and Greece. In Polish, they call them roly-poly toys, like toys that fall up and get up and down and up and down. Yeah. In Polish, that is Vanka Vastanka.
Right.
And in Romania, they call a yo-yo club ABBA. Because the top division is Division A and the division below is Division B. So they got A, B, B, A.
Yeah. Wow, I was all going off on a tangent like the winner takes it all.
Yeah. I read about some famous, there's lots of different yo-yo clubs. Some of the better names, the better known names I found were Heart of Midlothian went down and then up and then down and then up and then down again 5 times.
Wow.
From 1976 to 81, and FC Köln did the same thing 2001 to 2006.
Yeah, they were the heartbeat of the league.
Actually, they've been flatlining ever since. 7 times Drogheda United in Ireland went down and then up from 93 to 2000, and Deportivo La Coruña, quite a big team, from 61 to 68, they went up and then down first, the other way around.
I think with Deportivo, we only think they're a big club because when we started getting into football, they won a couple of Spanish titles.
Yes, yeah, they won their one Spanish title in 99-2000.
It's similar to anyone who got into football in the 90s, and I don't know if it was in Ireland or in Iceland, but the first sort of foreign league that we watched in Britain was the Italian league. It was on Channel 4, half one in the afternoon, and we all thought Parma were these giants of Italian football.
Yeah,
but no, we got them in their 3 good seasons.
Yeah. It's like you started tuning into the Premier League the year Blackburn won it.
Yeah.
But there are two teams that I could find that have done up and down 10 times
in a row.
Yeah. Was a team called BFC Sudring in Germany from 1950 to 1960 in the Oberliga Berlin and the Amateurliga Berlin. They went up and down. And from 1996 to 2006, Aris Limassol in the top and second division in Cyprus went down and up 10 times in a row as well. I read about superstitions.
Mm-hmm.
Clubs that have weird and wacky superstitions. Botafogo in Brazil.
Yep.
They had an interesting mascot unofficially for a while. Donald Duck.
Donald Duck?
Yeah. They weren't allowed to have him officially as a mascot because, you know, Disney are Disney.
Yeah.
Notoriously litigious. But they found another animal to replace him. In 1948, at a match between their reserve team and the team Bon Successo, a stray dog ran onto the pitch during a Botafogo attack and distracted the opposition goalkeeper, leading to a goal. So the Botafogo president, Carlito Rocha, ordered that they catch the dog and make him attend all subsequent games. According to Alex Bellos, who's written a book about interesting football stuff, apparently the president would let the dog loose on the pitch when Botafogo needed to cool the game down in order to break up the opposition's rhythm. And as the season went on, the dog Baribo was at all these games, and Botafogo kept winning. And during one particular game, just before it, during the warm-up, Bariba lifted his leg on one of the Botafogo players and took a pee. Botafogo won the match. And then from then on, not only did the dog have to be at the matches, Botafogo had to try and get him to piss on a player before they played. They went on to win their championship that year.
Wow.
And their current mascot of Botafogo is Manequinho, who's a replica of the mannequin piss in Brussels, which I hope is related to the dog taking a piss.
And on the mannequin piss is in the little boy...
weeing, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, right. Fountain. Yeah, yeah. So they've gone from Donald Duck to this stray dog to a peeing child.
Wow.
The obvious progression. We've all been there.
I would like to see them have a Botafogo t-shirt with, like, the ascent of man.
Yes.
Duck, dog, child.
That's another Icelandic version of Rock, Paper, Scissors.
Yes. Duck, dog, child. Oh, you lose. Always child.
Always child. And Deportivo have an interesting superstition of their own. They line the Riazor, which is their home stadium, with garlic to ward off evil spirits and bad luck. Apparently, between 1992 and 2010, they never lost at home to Real Madrid.
I thought you were going to say, apparently, between 1992 and 2010, they were never attacked by banshees.
Not a vampire in sight in Deportivo. Interestingly, I've moved on to dumb names for football clubs.
Great.
And there is a team called the Crouch End Vampires that play not far from where we're recording.
Yeah, a mile and a half away.
Yeah, yeah. In 1897, Crouch End FC merged with Vampires FC to become Crouch End Vampires. And they play now in the Southern Amateur League Senior Division 2, only presumably after sundown.
Yeah.
And back in the day, they were one of those teams that played teams with names like Thames Ironworks and Civil Service.
Oh, like we could spend hours going over hilarious names.
Oh, right? I'm about to.
I'll just say, you reminded me, when you talked about five-a-side teams, there is Pete Donaldson, who is a host on the Football Ramble.
Yes.
His five-a-side football team, obviously there are British teams called things like Brighton and Hove Albion and West Bromwich Albion. His five-a-side team is called Perfidious Albion.
That's great.
It's a great, great joke for Shakespeare fans.
Yeah, absolutely. Civil Service, I mentioned, they, along with Blackheath Football Club, are one of two clubs to be both founder members of the Football Association and the Rugby Football Union.
Great.
Yeah, it's a good interesting thing, isn't it? And at the FA's founding meeting, the civil service were represented by a guy called Mr. Warren from the War Office. So they then became identified as the War Office Club for a long time, which is great. Intimidating. And they took part in the first ever football match at Buckingham Palace in 2013 to celebrate the 150th anniversary of the FA. They played against Polytechnic FC, which was set up in 1875. They lost 2-1. And at halftime, Buckingham Palace footmen and women in waistcoats and tailcoats served water, chocolate bars and orange slices on silver platters to the teams.
I mean, that's how all Americans think all football matches take place over here.
That it was
more orange, sir.
Yeah. They had Wembley groundskeepers lay out the pitch in Buckingham Palace. Howard Webb, the Premier and World Cup referee, refereed the match. And Prince William, before the match, warned the teams as they broke one of his granny's windows, they'd have to answer to her.
Solid. I mean, as a staunch Republican, that makes me like Prince William even more. I do hope that Howard Webb was refereeing the match in kind of like a white three-piece suit with a cravat and a pipe.
Instead of like a pocket watch, he had like a grandfather clock.
Yeah.
The other weird football team names I found. Do you remember TNS in Wales?
Yes, TNS Systems.
Total Network Solutions.
That's the one, sorry.
Yeah, they were a team who, from 1997 to 2006, they were originally called Clan Sanfred FC in Wales, but they were sponsored by Total Network Solutions for 10 years, so they took their name. They changed the name to another TNS, to the New Saints,
in the mid-2000s,
yeah.
So there's a wonderful piece of commentary from Jeff Stelling on Soccer Saturday, and they've got like the vidi printer of all the scores coming in, and Total Network Solutions score a goal that make them meant they won the division they were in.
Yeah.
And Jeff Stelling goes, "They'll be partying on the streets of Total Network Solutions tonight."
So good.
There's a great Nigerian team called Police Machine.
Oh, you know about them? Oh no, I don't. Go on.
Yeah, well, that's it. That's it.
They're just Police Machine.
Yeah.
Africa does have some great football team names. Mm-hmm. For example, in Ghana, you have Hearts of Oak, who are also known as Phobia.
Phobia.
Yeah. 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 Hopefully it's not a phobia of football. Or something. In Malawi, you have Nyasa Big Bullets.
Great.
Ethiopia has Ethiopian Coffee SC. And Botswana is the king of them all. It has Botswana Meat Commission.
That's an incredible prog rock band.
Right. Golden Bush, Naughty Boys, and Miscellaneous.
Miscellaneous.
Yeah, it's so good.
I do like, I mean, I quite like Switzerland's got some pretty good names. There's, you can have Grasshopper versus Young Boys.
Yeah, yeah. Do you know why Young Boys are called Young Boys?
Is it to do with the Venture Scouts or something like that?
No, they were founded by some university students, and they played the Old Boys Association from Bath University. So sort of as a joke, they call themselves the Young Boys as opposed to the Old Boys.
Yeah.
And the best thing, do you know where Young Boys play their football?
No.
At the Wankdorf Stadium. And no, I refuse to call it Wankdorf. on the similar line, you've got Deportivo Wanka in the Peruvian Andes. In Indonesia, you've got Seaman Padang.
That's the noise of someone ejaculating very quickly.
Apparently, their sponsor is a company called Seaman who makes cement. Something that gets very hard. In Bolivia, La Paz has a team called The Strongest. So presumably you should all give up now. And they also, in Bolivia's war with Paraguay in the 1930s, a lot of the players and staff of the club were made up a division in the army. So there is a battle called Batalla de Cañada Strongest. So they're probably the only football club in the world to have a battle named after them, which is, you know, forget about winning a league title. That's the goal everyone wants.
Yeah. Well, there's the football war, which is El Salvador versus, I think, Nicaragua.
I think you might be right, yeah.
Yeah, which it happened in the, I think it was the 70s or the 80s, and the football match descending into violence that precipitated a 6-day war between them.
El Salvador and Honduras in 1969, apparently.
Yeah, I'm so sorry to the people of Nicaragua. I'm sure you are peace-loving football fans to a man.
We're very big in Nicaragua this week.
The lesser-known Six-Day War.
Yeah.
Well, what can I say? The Jews control the media. Of course you've heard about ours.
Apparently, it's the 100 Hours War. So, they had more sense than to try and trample on that name.
Also, I'd love it if there was also a Yom Kippur War, but it happened in South America as well.
Yeah.
Incidentally, guys, as the Jewish member of this podcast, happy Yom Kippur. Yeah, this is the holiest and most solemn day in the Jewish religious calendar.
Aww.
And I'm spending it with you guys chatting shit about football trivia.
Thank you so much.
What better way to mention things like Deportivo Wanka. Yeah. my favourite team name, though, has to be Grenades FC, who play in Antigua. Do you want to know what their crest is?
Is it a grenade?
It's a half grenade, half football. That's the one dangerous football match.
Yeah. There must be a Molotov FC somewhere.
Then I started reading about actually bad football teams with poor results. RBC Roosendaal.
Mm-hmm.
They played in the Eredivisie in Holland in 2005-2006. They only earned 9 points. But maybe the most ignominious thing of all was they had more managers than wins that season.
Oh, yes, please.
They had two managers, but only won one match, a 2-0 win over NEC Nijmegen. They have since gone bankrupt as a club, sadly. Fort William, they're quite famously a bad football club in Britain. There was a documentary about them.
Fort William just had their first victory in 800 and something days.
Absolutely. September, on the 11th of September 2019, they won 1-0 at home against Clack na Cuddin, recording their first league win in the Highland League in Scotland in 882 days.
Wow.
And that came a couple of months after, in July 2019, they won their first competitive match in 707 days. They beat Nairn County 5-2 in a cup tie, which ended a 69 game run without victory. That win came a day after BBC Scotland broadcast The Fort, a documentary about their winless run.
that's what they needed. That's the ginger root up the bum.
Yeah. Well, the best thing was the last season, 2018-2019, they finished on minus 7 points. Because they'd fielded an ineligible player in a match, so they got a 9-point penalty to add them. They only drew two matches all season. Minus 7 is a pretty impressive score.
And then, Count, you've got to be having a word, because if Fort William, you know, if you lose 1-0 to the worst team in Scotland, fine, those results can happen, but shipping 5 goals to them.
Yeah, it's poor, isn't it?
Yeah.
Maybe they, I don't know. I'd say, we should investigate Nairn County. Somebody was up to something. I'm starting the conspiracy theory now.
Match fixing in the Highland League.
Yeah. Brechin City went through the entire Scottish Championship in 2017-18 without a single victory. The first Scottish club in 126 years to do that. They finished with 4 points from a possible 108 points. But my suggestion for the world's worst football club are from Brazil. Ibis Sport. They are part of the Pernambucano Football Federation, and from 1980 to 1984, that's 3 years and 11 months, they did not win a single football game. They became known as the worst team in the world, according to the Guinness Book of Records.
Wow.
Not only that, but it sort of became their thing. Because up until September 2017, they'd gone on another losing streak for not winning a match for 2 years. And they're in this sort of bottom division of their state championship. And then the club's president, Ozier Jr., said he wanted to get them to the top of the first division. He really set his sights on improving things. And things began to change. They won 3 matches in a row, including a 1-0 victory against Ferroviário do Cabo. And after that match, the players and the club were having a post-match barbecue and beers to celebrate. And fans stormed the bar where they were celebrating to say, "Please stop winning." The protest leader, Nilcinho Filho, said, "This is destroying our history." Fans went on social media to call for resignations. One tweet said, "This is a worrying situation in the long term. To stop being an icon and to be just another winning team, it's the coach's fault."
I'd love if one fan was like, "I've got an idea, lads, though. What if we get a dog onto the pitch and get the pitch?"
A former footballer for the club, Mauro Shampoo, that's his name, he scored 1 goal in 10 years at the club. And he criticised the victory, saying, "If we keep winning, we're going to lose our brand." The president has said that the reason they've suddenly started winning games is that a lot of players have joined the team because they've become recently unemployed in the area. They've suddenly had an influx of new blood.
Yeah.
And it's going to take a lot of work to get them to the top of the tree. Nilcinho Filho says that even though the club's promoted, they already have their place in history. Even if we go on to win the Brazilian championship one day, no one will ever be able to take our title as the worst team in the world. I've had a look. This year, 2019, they're through to the second stage of their league already. So they sort of like start with 10 or 12 teams, they whittle it down through the year, so that they play another stage and another stage. So they are through to the second stage, so maybe that dream is going to come true. But they play in their lovely red and black stripes with an ibis on their crest, and they've been around for 70 or 80 years. I think we should ask them if they want sponsorship then.
Coming from Iceland for decades, the Icelandic team was considered one of the worst teams in the world.
It's all changed now.
It's vindicated itself a bit in recent years, definitely. But when football was first started in Iceland, like at the end of the 19th century, people were so clueless about how to do this that they got, I think, a rule book from England, which they just translated. And they got so many of the things wrong, like the word goal, they believed that meant gold. So every time people were scoring in the first matches, they would scream like, good, good, which is the Icelandic word for gold.
You're getting like a Spanish a Spanish commentator going, goal!
Well, also, do they know when they scored a goal, did they not get like a little gold ingot from the Bank of Iceland?
Probably didn't have any gold. Yeah. A piece of lava. But Iceland has like a hall of fame for its national team. There's a small cafe, if you drive just out of Reykjavik, there's a small cafe called The Little Cafe. And they have like a wall of fame, which is really a wall of shame, because it's like Iceland's first international match. Iceland's first own goal.
I think that's but they both the same thing.
Same year.
Oh no.
And the first match was, of course, something we lost, and notoriously lost most of the international matches for like the first few decades. But the thing that really fucked us up was in 1967, Iceland was playing Denmark, and Denmark is the former ruler of Iceland. We used to be a sort of province in Denmark.
Yeah.
And Icelanders were very gung-ho, and we were like, we're going to beat them now. We're going to play offense now. We're going to have like, we're gonna attack them. And this was like in Copenhagen. And it was broadcast live to Iceland, the first live broadcast from outside the country ever. And people were really stoked. And the match went terribly wrong. It went 14-2, which is unbelievably bad result.
Yeah, that's,
I've seen a recording of the game, and like after they reached 6-0, the Danes stopped running over like the midline. They just started doing long shots, and they all went in. And you could hear like initially the commentators are like, "Ah, yes, oh, another goal for Denmark," and then like if it's 8 goals, and they're like, "Yes, another goal, but not well. Of course, they don't have the whole football tradition over there. This is." We should not try that hard to shoot. And then Iceland scored a goal all of a sudden, and then another one. And the guy who scored the goal, Hemmi Gunn, he said like, "Okay, guys, they're going to break now. We're going to lose now.
The comeback is on."
Yeah, that was, like, that was 10-2.
Yeah. I hope all the Icelandic fans were chanting, "We're going to win 11-10.
Yes. And this game just created this immense scar on the national psyche.
Oh, but that's to be understood. They still thought they were taking coroner kicks at that point.
But the team got better and saw some results. It managed to beat East Germany in 1975.
All right, not so, West Germany, let's be clear.
East Germany.
Yeah, no, but the East German team were all 7 foot tall and with muscles the size of watermelons.
And I don't, yeah, exactly. God knows what they did to get that way, but... Yeah. But they were very angry, the East Germans, that they lost to this pathetic little Minnows team. So when the Icelandic team went to East Germany to play the away match, they severely fucked with them. And my father-in-law was on the team at this point. They basically drove to the checkpoint, and at the checkpoint they were in a bus, and these military policemen came into the bus and, passports please, took the passports of everyone, and then they were looking at them, and they found one passport that they found some problem with, and they came back in, "Sigurdsson, Mr. Sigurdsson, please," and he was like, "Yes, come with us, please." And he basically stood up and said, tell my wife I love her. And they paraded him outside of the bus and stood there, 5 military policemen, and Sigurdsson, "Yes." "Okay, 1, 2, 3. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, lieber Sigurdsson." And they went on to lose that match, I think, 3-0. But
what's it like coming from a country? What gives it... Firstly, a country that you describe yourselves as minnows, but you're not. Iceland's never been an Andorra or a Luxembourg or San Marino. You've been bad at football, but you've never been that bad.
In recent years, definitely. We had like 20 years period where we're like, we lost, but it was only like 2-0, you know?
Yeah, I've just looked at Ireland's record against Iceland. We've played you 8 times, and... 1-5, drawn 2, but lost the most recent one in a friendly in 2017.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's not look at England's record against Iceland.
Oh, yeah, let's hang on. Let's have a look. What's England's record v. Iceland?
There was one match in 2003, I think, or 2004. It was a friendly against England, and that one was like 6-1 or something.
It was.
Good.
2004,
okay.
Yeah.
Well, and a draw,
1-1 draw in 1982, and then 2016 at a little tournament called well, the UEFA European Championships, a 2-1 defeat. Yeah.
Yes. So, yeah. That is a minor footnote in the whole history.
Yeah. Iceland have that great fact where Ida Gudjonsson came on to replace his dad in a football match.
Yes. Which is quite cool. Sadly, they never got to play the same match together because he got injured after that game. But yeah, he did come on as a substitute. But Gudjonsson, when I lived in England, he was playing for Chelsea. And that's like next level stuff for an Icelandic footballer.
Yes,
he
not
only won the Premier League, he also won like the Champions League later with Barcelona. But at the time, he was like, you know, partying with Chelsea and John Terry. And one of his best friends is a guy called Pétur Marteinsson. He's also a professional football player from Iceland.
And your cousin, presumably.
Definitely. 6 times removed. But he was playing for Stoke at the time, but he was injured. And he always just came to hang out with Gudjonsson when they got drunk. And the other guys really liked Pétur because he's really funny. And he always got drunk with them. But they never asked, like, what do you do for a living? So he never told them, I'm a professional football player too. I play for Stoke. So they just thought he was either Gudjonsson's like drunken friend, like, and they called him Social Pete because he was social. And they would always ask Gudjonsson, oh, is Social Pete coming? Oh, I love Social Pete, he's so funny. And then Iceland played that friendly against England, and then by that point Pétur Marteinsson had recovered from his injury and he's on the squad. And they have this moment where they're shaking hands, and John Terry and Frank Lampard are like, all right mates, yeah, have a good match, hello Gudjonsson, yeah. Fucking hell, Social Pete! Social Pete's on the team! How small is this country? So I got fucking drunk with him at karaoke last week. Social Pete! They put anyone on! And then they started playing the match and they're like, hang on, Social Pete's pretty good, actually. Yeah. And they would later face him, I think, in the cup when Stoke played Chelsea. And by that point, they were like walking over to the Stoke side before the game, doing the warm-up, which teams usually don't do. And they were like, all right, Social Pete, man, you're a legend.
Yeah, just having a couple of Jägermeisters.
Social Pete playing a very long game there.
Yeah.
Yeah, whereas, of course, John Terry's nickname is Anti-Social John.
The Thunderclap, the Viking Thunderclap's a pretty cool gift Iceland has given to football.
Yeah, and it's the best thing about the Thunderclap or the Viking clap is that it's stolen.
Yeah.
There was a club called Motherwell.
Yeah, it's a Scottish thing, isn't
it? They came to Iceland to play a team called Breiðablik, and they did that thing. And the local supporters were like, oh, that's pretty good.
Yeah,
that's nice. That's not too bad.
We'll borrow that.
And then it just got world famous. So 100% Icelandic.
Yeah. Most of the Irish football team in the early 90s was English. Yeah.
It doesn't feel authentically Scottish, does it? Because Motherwell are a Glasgow team, or like near enough Glasgow.
I think it's just an elaborate way of keeping your hands warm. very cold countries.
Yeah.
It's compressing all of the rubbing your hands together into one easy to manage rub your hands together.
Yeah. Everything we have is borrowed. We say, oh, from Iceland, when we're cheering them on. That's like, hey, come on, you Spurs.
The thing I love about Iceland is, because in my mind, Iceland is a warm, wholesome, communal country. It's like someone has taken a small town and just put it on a Bond supervillain's base. But when the Icelandic team came back from 2016 and there was a picture of, I don't know, thousands of people in a square and I presume Reykjavik.
Oh yeah, I was there.
And you all did the thunderclap together. And I was like, listen, in Iceland, that is lovely to watch. In Hungary, that's a red flag.
Yeah, right? The rest of the world has suddenly gone, ooh, hang on.
That's a slippery slope.
We better watch Iceland. They're organising.
Who's in Parliament now? Yeah. Who are they catering to?
Well, that's it. When the climate apocalypse comes, Iceland's going to be fine because you've got all the geothermals.
The thing is that we've been sort of like for years pretty indifferent about like global warming. We're like, well, it's fucking cold here. It wouldn't mind getting a few degrees up. But apparently it's going to get colder in Iceland with global warming.
Oh, you're going to lose the Gulf Stream.
Yeah, and the glacier, the Greenland glacier is melting on top of us. So we're like, hang on, we can't catch a break.
Yeah.
It's going to get even colder.
Oh, man, that's brutal.
Yeah.
Maybe you're going to have to get very good at water polo.
Yes. Yeah. We'll have enough water, that's for sure.
Yeah, ice polo. It's where you ride landlocked narwhals on skates across an ice hockey pitch.
Glacial polo. Many people go missing during matches.
Yeah. Glacial polo takes forever.
And there's a crevice and the team is off and we have to reschedule the match. Everyone's dead.
Did you say that your father-in-law played against Wales as well?
Yes, he did. Yeah, that match is a pretty much of a footnote. That match is really strange. That was for the qualifiers, I think, for the World Cup or something, early 80s. Mm. And Wales were on a good run.
Good period in Wales history then. Yeah,
and they could have qualified, and they had, I think, beat Iceland at home, and they were going to beat them. They had beat Iceland in Iceland. They were going to beat them in Wales. What happened was Iceland was completely out of the qualifiers. They were not going to be going to the tournament. Mm-hmm. But somebody in Wales thought it would be a good idea to do a little campaign before that game, where they got a couple of the players to pose with gorilla masks. Yeah, before the match. And they had this thing that they were getting people riled up about, which was, we're going to make monkeys out of Iceland. And
wow,
and this somehow made it back to Iceland into the news, and people were like, what is that, monkeys out of, what kind of a weird hate speech is that? I don't know, monkeys in Iceland, okay, I guess. And this pissed the team off apparently so bad.
Yeah.
And then they went to play that match, and there were football fans like dressed with monkey masks having a laugh. And they were 2-0 under, like, Wales scored 2 goals. But then the power went out after, like, 50 minutes. So they had, like, an extra break for, like, 30 minutes. During that break, the Icelandic team got so fired up. They were like, okay, we can't qualify, but we're damn sure not going to let them qualify either. And then they went back on, and they scored 2 screamer goals.
Wow.
Just at the whistle, last whistle. And it just went completely silent. And apparently my father-in-law, who's a pretty calm guy, he just snapped. And he ran to, like, the stadium and screamed, who's a monkey now? Who's a monkey now, you bastards? And people were, like, throwing beer cans at him. Security had to escort them away.
Iceland are pretty good at sort of getting their own way over Wales in general, aren't they?
Well, yeah, crushing the hopes of other small teams. It's, that used to be what we did.
And it's what you still do with England.
Yeah. It's all relative, though.
Cool. So are we going to nominate the Iceland's 14-2 defeat as them as being the worst football team? Have you got any other nominations?
I think that is my nomination. Yeah, that period in time is possibly the least confidence we have ever had in our football skills.
Were you alive when that happened, or was that before you were born?
No, it's like 14 years before I was born, so probably alive in some capacity.
Yeah, like, you know, because England, we've got 1966 hanging over us, and Ireland, I guess if you're young, you can remember the 1990 World Cup. But
still the greatest achievement of any football team ever.
but up until a couple of years ago, the one thing you had to remember was just getting humbled by the Danes in Copenhagen.
But in 1967,
Yeah, this went a long way to fixing that, this win over England. But we still have never beat Denmark. Never. Never.
Oh, and that'd be the big one.
The day that happens, I think a lot of people are just going to get up and say, like, that's done. We don't need a team anymore.
Yeah.
We've directed the wrongs of the past.
Disband the Icelandic football team. It has served its purpose.
Lower the flag of the Icelandic Football Federation. 2 men fold it together and eat the flag.
You guys have heard of UEFA and you've heard of FIFA, mm-hmm. right? Have you heard of CONIFA?
CONIFA?
Yeah.
No.
The trees?
No, not the trees. CONIFA are an organisation who are there.
More upfront about the cons that they want.
Yeah, that each match starts where both team captains, instead of giving a pennant to each other, they give a brown paper envelope to the referee.
Yeah.
Which everyone has the most money in, they win the match.
Yeah, they toss the coin and one of them snatches the coin and runs away.
They're an international football organisation for states that are not recognised, for minorities, or for stateless people and regions.
Oh, cool.
It's wonderful. So do
Greenland play in it?
I'm going to tell you who was in the most recent CONIFA Football World Cup.
Love
it's
it.
An absolute delight.
I'm rooting for Beer to Will so hard.
Yeah.
Right
yeah. So this was meant to be put on in Barawa, which is a place in Somalia that cool. like wants independence, but for reasons it was not able to be put there, so it was held in London. And there's an amazing okay. gentleman called Paul Watson who helped organise it, and I referred to them before, but the Football Ramble did a brilliant interview with him. He's a guy who has brought football to, he has managed a Mongolian Premier League football team, and before that he worked with a football team in Polynesia. Yeah. He's quite a maverick, this guy. The other place he coaches in various Micronesian states where they had like these really boggy pitches, and the players just didn't understand the rules, didn't care to understand the rules. Yeah. And they were, because there was such a culture in the country of not wanting to be embarrassed, if they would get through on goal, they would deliberately miss and then laugh about it. So the concept of scoring a goal was just so outside of their of their conception. The idea of competitive sport was so outside their conception. But these are the people who took part in the CONIFA World Cup in 2018. First of all, you had Tamil Eelam. You had Abkhazia, Felvidek, West Armenia, Barawa, the hosts, right. nominally, Tibet, wait, we've heard of them,
yeah.
Kiribati,
yeah, yeah.
Cascadia.
Cascadia.
It's a country, but it's not recognised by FIFA.
Is it not?
Yeah.
Oh.
Padania, Northern Cyprus.
Oh, yeah.
Punjab, United Koreans in Japan, Matabeleland, Kabvilia, Ellen Vanin.
Who's Ellen Vanin?
The Isle of Man. Sekeliland, Tuvalu, and the eventual winners, Carpataya. Carpataya are Carpet World's biggest.
Used to be the sponsors, now they're the country.
So, and I'm just going to read you a couple of quick scores, just because they're a delight to hear. Ellen Vanin 4, Cascadia 1, Carpalia 5, Tibet 1. Oh. But my favourite one, United Koreans in Japan 0, Western Armenia 0. Like, just imagine the bit, just imagine those two teams.
What a derby! This sounds like the Fast Show.
Yeah. Channel, yeah.
Sporting Club, bang, 0. Yeah. Club Atletico Vacuum, 0.
Yeah. Well, they do. They like they all sound faintly mythical.
Yeah, they do.
Carpatalia, and Carpatalia is a, I'm clearly pronouncing it wrong, but it was a part of Hungary, and Hungary's got a really rich footballing tradition.
Oh, like Carpathia. Is that related to that?
Maybe.
Yeah.
Could be. But they're sort of like keeping up the rich Hungarian footballing tradition. So I looked at who were the worst team in this tournament, and obviously they were from Polynesia. It was Tuvalu. Tuvalu had a record of played 3, lost 3, scored 1, let in 15.
Wow.
And listeners, you listen to our worst striker recording, might remember that I looked up the worst team in the world, then Tonga, and found out who were the worst teams they had played against and lost against.
Oh, yeah.
Until eventually I found the worst team in the world internationally. So, Tuvalu. The team, they have beaten the worst of the Chagos Islands. They beat them 6-1.
Britain own them, don't they? They're disputed, I think, the Chagos Islands.
Yeah. Oh, well, the Chagos Islands should go is go, well, technically, if we're part of Britain, can we borrow some players from there to get the rankings? Next up, the Chagos Islands beat Raisha 6-1, which is unfair because they're playing just against some Indian yogurt. Now, I genuinely, before I started researching this, I thought that the worst team in the world, according to this standard, would be somewhere in Polynesia. But no, Raisha was a province of the Roman Empire and is now... they weren't playing against Centurions.
It's very hard if the team you're feeling has been dead for 2,000 years.
I mean, I still think that they would give Sunderland a tough game.
Yeah.
But so Raisha is they're sort of like a wee little not even a canton, a cantonette in Switzerland.
Yeah.
But Raisha have beaten a team.
Who have they beaten?
Raisha have beaten Franconia 6-0. Which again, Franconia sounds like it's wandered out of a Marx Brothers film. But Franconia is in sort of the southeastern region of Germany. Bavaria, I think, is southeast.
Yeah.
And again, borders with Switzerland. And Raisha and Franconia have got a little rivalry.
Oh, do they?
Yeah. In Franconia's first ever match against Raisha, they beat them 4-2.
Okay.
And that's their only victory to date. But clearly, the Raisha are like the Hulk. You don't want to make them angry. And that's why they beat them 6-0 later on.
So our Franconia bottom of this tree you've been assembling.
Yeah, yeah. So according to what I can find, Franconia are bottom of the tree for sort of the international matches done via sort of like a international boxing rules of who beats who.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Just to let you know who is at the bottom of Kenefa's official rankings. the current world champions are not top. The top of him is Occitania, which is sort of this region around southern France, northern Spain. They speak the Occitan languages and make delightful perfume.
Sponsored by it.
Yeah, exactly. You can smell the wingers coming a mile off. but they're clearly just sort of like sweeping up all the players, go, oh, I can play for Spain or France, so I guess I'll play for you.
Yeah.
But in the bottom, I'll tell you the bottom 11 teams. In 29, it's the Romani people.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Then you've got the Isle of Man, South Ossetia, the Tamils, Monaco, the nation, not the football team. Franconia, Tuvalu, the Chagos Islands, Tibet, but they forgive you for beating them. Raisha, Darfur, and Kiribati are, according to Kenefa, the worst stateless team in the world.
That's quite a famous, like, I mean, in the realm of like little known and bad football teams, Kiribati is a relatively well known country. I thought I wouldn't have pegged them to be bottom of the tree. As reminds us of the, remember the Pacific Games from 2015 that we talked about in that episode as well. Micronesia's score lines. Where are Micronesia in the world rankings?
Well, Micronesia are, I believe...
Or are they an assemblage of lots of teams?
No. Micronesia are a team... Do you know what? Micronesia are not part of Kenefa, so I can only presume...
They're part of FIFA.
They're part of FIFA. No, it's not. This is bizarre. It's not a member of FIFA either.
Ah.
You would have. Because the big thing.
Just to refresh people's memories, Micronesia took part in the 2015 Pacific Games with a team.
Yes.
Which included people who'd never played a 90-minute game of football before. and they played three matches, lost three matches on a combined score of minus 114. Wow. Their goal difference was, they lost 30-0 to Tahiti, 38-0 to Fiji, and 46-0 to Vanuatu.
Wow. The best bit of it was, because when Vanuatu right lined up against them, because Tahiti and Fiji had destroyed them, they had to beat Micronesia at least 39-0.
Yeah.
So at half-time, it was 26-0 to Vanuatu, and one journalist described it as the tensest 26-0 you'd ever recorded on.
That's right.
Like, that team talk. You're like, lads, you've got to up your game.
Yeah.
And brilliantly, Tahiti and Fiji played out a 0-0 draw, so they both got through.
Wow.
World-class shithousery.
And I think the famous match is when Australia beat American Samoa in World Cup qualifying in 2001. I think they beat them 31-0.
Yeah.
31-0.
And Archie Thompson, who scored 13 goals for Australia, said... There wasn't much else they could do because the American Samoans were laughing at themselves by how embarrassing.
My favourite thing about that.
Do you know why they played so badly? By the way, in fairness to them, FIFA insisted that the squad had to have US passports.
Yes. Yeah.
So a lot of players that would have played for them weren't allowed to play.
And when there was two Australians that played for Rangers at the time, they came back and the Rangers manager Dick Advocaat actually fined them a week's wages for bullying. Which I've got a lot of time to talk. Some other awful football teams to talk about. Manchester United. In 1930, Man United were not that well-known a team. They'd won a couple of titles, they'd won an FA Cup, but they'd also been relegated a couple of times. They were not big hitters. But in 1930, they had their worst ever season.
Until now, says the Liverpool fan.
Yeah.
Rubbing his hands together from the top of his perch.
They lost all of their opening 12 games, shipping 49 goals, including scores such as 2-6, 6-0, and losing 7-4.
7-4, I love the football in the 30s.
Yeah. Well, I've been reading a book about, generally what I'm currently reading at the moment is a book about the history of football tactics, because I am easing into middle age, happily.
Yeah.
But I love the old football tactics. The book's called Inverting the Pyramid, because old football formations were 2-3-5.
Yes.
Like, defending was seen as sort of like an ungentlemanly thing to do.
Yeah.
So you just like, it's almost like if someone was running towards you, you just go, no, after you, I insist. So Man United finished the season with 150 15 goals. Conceded.
Good.
That was the most dismal start to a season by any top flight side in Europe's big five leagues for nearly 9 decades.
Wow.
It wasn't beaten until Serie A strugglers Benevento in 2017.
Oh.
But my favourite...
Yet another record United are losing.
But my favourite thing is, after drawing their final match 4-4 at home at Middlesbrough, their manager, and prepare yourself for a great 1930s name, Herbert Bamlett.
That sounds like a spooner or something. Yeah. It's not called Berbert Hamlet.
Yes. Herbert Bamlett kept...
Monty Python. Silly. Bamlett.
Yeah. He kept his job until the next season.
Why?
It was, mate, it was at the height of the Great Depression, so they probably couldn't afford anyone else.
Yes, yeah. Herbert Bamlett. Of course they played so badly with a guy called Herbert Bamlett.
Yeah, you can't take him seriously. Yeah. I also looked at a club quite nearby, Darwen Football Club, D-A-R-W-E-N.
Oh, yes, yeah, I've heard of them.
Yeah, so they were pioneers of the initial professional league. And early doors, they did quite well. They reached the semi-finals of the FA Cup in 1880 and 1881. And they had a local rivalry with Blackburn in 1878. Their match against Blackburn was possibly the first ever played again under floodlights.
Oh, cool.
In the 1890s, things did not go well for them.
They failed to evolve.
Bravard, my friend.
Thank you.
So they joined the... They were elected to the Football League. We should do that more often now. I'd like that. It's just once every couple of years, you could... So there was like an X-Factor-style election.
Oh, I was imagining like a political campaign.
Oh, yeah.
They'd be like, the team have to go door-to-door handing out leaflets and telling you what policies they'd bring to the
It's 4-4-2, nothing fancy.
Yes, Forest Green or one of those with like really nice green policies. And yeah. They'd be in.
No, they'd lose immediately. Yeah. You see the in this country. So
white supremacists FC.
Yeah. Or Leeds United, according to their kit. So they were elected to the league. March 1892, they lost 12-0 to West Brom, which has never been surpassed in the league's top division. They were
They went straight into the top division. Were there multiple divisions? Was there only
Hear
one?
Hear me out.
Oh, right.
They went straight into the only division.
Okay, that's fine.
At the end of that season, they finished bottom and were the first team ever to be relegated and become founder members of the second division.
Ah! Yeah, okay. They basically invented a kids' table for them to eat at.
Yeah! Yeah, they didn't learn grass, they just played on green felt. Yeah.
you boys play over here.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, the referee was just a teddy bear in a white strip.
A Teddy Ruxpin.
A Teddy Ruxpin.
A walking teddy bear.
Just programmed to say 1-0 against Darwen.
Yeah.
2-0 against Darwen. 3-0 against Darwen.
My favourite thing of them, finishing 14th out of 14 in the top division, is their highest ever league finish. They were promoted again in 1893, but they were then relegated the next season.
At which point, presumably, there were more teams than 14, so they finished lower than they had done.
There you go.
Good.
Their last season as a league club was 1898 and 1899, where they suffered 18 consecutive defeats.
Oh.
No one has beaten that record, despite Sunderland's best efforts in 2003, when they lost 17 on the bounce.
Wow. I'm celebrating Liverpool winning 17 league games on the bounce at the moment, but losing 17 in a row is...
Imagine what that must be like.
Oh.
But I'm torn between two for my choice. I'm gonna tell you about a horrible team from Portugal. genuinely horrifying. This team is called Canelas. And in late October 2010, this unheralded amateur football team couldn't stop winning. And you're going to think, Ben, we're talking about the worst football team here. Couldn't stop winning. 10 straight matches without dropping a point. And they didn't concede a goal. And they won every single game 3-0. And the reason was because teams kept forfeiting playing against them because they were so violent and so criminal that no one wanted to play them.
Wow.
And Canelas were basically made up of... ultras who supported Porto. and like ultras, if you're not a football fan, listeners, they are like the they're basically extremists. They're partisans.
They're like the fundamentalist wing of football supporters.
Yes, precisely. Groups, yeah. And so the president of one of the other teams in the league said, there is coercion, intimidation, and referees do not have the courage to write reports to say what is really happening.
Wow.
And so they all took a fine. They were fined about €750 each.
I like it that it took them 10 games to reach this decision as well.
Oh, no. When you say 10 games, no, they won 10 games on the bounce because no one turned up.
Yeah, but that's what I mean. I like that the league, whoever's administrating this league, has gone... Well, the first 6 or 7 sort of walkovers they were given, probably nothing to look into.
It was on till 9th time.
Yeah, happened. Yeah. There we go. Lots of rung alarm bells.
That's a pattern.
Yeah. Yeah.
The nickname of this team is the Super Dragons. And
the Soup Dragons.
No, not the Super Dragons. Their leader is a chap called Fernando Madureira, and he says, we're not a violent team, we play the same as everyone else. We do not want to lose, we run, we fight for the ball, and we give everything on the field. However, he's also quoted as saying, listen, in the Super Dragons, there's good guys and bad guys. We have drug dealers, killers, but good people too.
Good people on both sides. Yeah. On both wings.
Brilliantly... they got to a stage is that they had to play the last 2 games of the regular season because the 2 opponents had to play or they would have been relegated because they had lost other games elsewhere, so they had to try and get points off penalties.
Right, so they had to. So, yeah.
And at the time of writing the article that I brilliantly Madureira said of them, they do not seem to be afraid anymore. he also said, listen, we've not got any discipline problems, really. We've only had a handful of yellows and only one red card. Now, that red card was shown to a man called Marco Gonçalves 2 minutes into a game against Rio Tinto. He responded to being sent off by steering his knee into the face of the referee.
Oh,
brutal gentleman.
I love an early red card.
But, yeah.
Was it originally a yellow?
Yeah.
Maybe even in the nose.
But brilliantly, Madureira, because they've won so many matches by default, they're in contention for promotion in the championship. So they were very tempting. But I think the team I'm going to pick is Queen's Park. Queen's Park are one of the other Glasgow clubs. You've got Rangers, you've got Celtic, Partick Thistle, or to steal, I think, a Billy Connolly joke, their full name is Partick Thistle Nil.
Yeah.
But Queen's Park have league attendance of around 750. Do you know what stadium they play in?
Please tell me it's Hampden Park.
It is Hampden Park.
Seats 60,000.
It's the Scottish National Stadium. It was the biggest stadium in the world until the Maracanã was built in the 50s, and that's where they play.
God.
And it's, I'm specifically talking about their team in...
I'm thinking, okay, a ring of seats around... If you had 750 people and you all got them all to sit in the front row, would that complete a ring around the entire stadium, or would there still be empty seats? Just the front row alone.
I want to tell you about their FA Cup run. As the top team in Scottish football, they were allowed to enter the English FA Cup, and they made it as far as that at the semi-finals without kicking a ball, as team after team pulled out of the tournament for one reason or another.
What year was this? What season was this?
This was 1872.
Okay, very early.
They earned a 1-1 draw in the semi-final against the Wanderers at home, but they couldn't afford the train fares to come south for the replay, and so Wanderers were awarded a bye and went on to win the final.
Oh, so close. Yes, so far.
And then the only other time they played 1884 and 1885, they got to the final in both those years, the only Scottish team ever to do so, but they lost both times to Blackburn Rovers.
Okay.
So now I say it out loud, I'm torn between them and Darwin. I think Darwin are worse, aren't they?
Sounds like, I mean, they got to the FA Cup final. Back then when there were only 4 teams and 2 of them were made up of, you know, war widows from the Crimea.
Yeah. Yeah, Crimean War Widows will be playing the Japanese of Korea.
Crimean War Widows, nil.
Japan,
the Royal Household, too.
Our selection are Barry's choice of Ibis Sport, the famed worst team in the world from 1980 to 1984, who are disappointed when they win. Harry's suggestion of the 1967 Iceland football team, who boldly went to attack the Danish national team and lost 14-2. Or my choice of Darwin FC, the English team that pretty much invented relegation. Wow. So many tough choices. I adore Iceland's team and I love their...
Oh, can I put forward a late entry?
Yeah.
Newcastle for the last 60 fucking years. Sorry, I could not go the entire podcast without saying it at least once.
We won the Intertoto Cup.
Against war widows from the Crimea in the final.
Look, I am not rising to this because on Saturday we beat a depleted and underwhelming Man United team 1-0 with a debutant goal from a local lad.
Because rising isn't something that they're very good at.
Do you know what? When I was growing up, Liverpool were the best team in the country, and I always wondered why everyone hated them. They were like, oh, they're always so smug about it. I was like, no, you're mixing that up with Man United. But now you're on top of the tree, I can see what they were talking about. Have a bit of grace and dignity. Right. I love Iceland, and I love the attitude with which they went to Copenhagen, but they did score two goals.
They did.
And one of them was a screamer.
So I'm not going to choose them. So it's between Ibis and Darwin.
Fair enough.
I sort of feel like I can't pick Darwin because I only realised at the last moment how bad they were.
Yeah. Not immediately obvious.
Yeah. But Ibis Sports are so pleased with themselves about losing and so angry when they win.
Yeah. That's the key point of this whole thing.
Yeah. That they seem to be absolutely on point for the podcast. So yes. Well done to Ibis Sport.
Oh, well done.
I'm so looking forward to when we go and play them in a friendly in the next pre-season.
Right, before we go, it's time for the world's worst news of the week, and we go to Xi'an in China, where we're going to meet a gentleman called Fen Jianan. He is 9 years old, and...
Go on.
What do you think I'm going to say?
I'll tell you after.
He has been dubbed the national flag baby by Chinese media. Because as...
Don't tell me they tie him to a pole and raise him. Significant events.
Pee on the players.
Yeah. Now, as the father of a toddler, I know that there are often very bizarre things that will just stop them crying. If they want to do the thing, do the thing. When he was a toddler... he stopped crying when he heard China's national anthem playing on TV during a flag-raising ceremony. I know, how delightfully nationalistic.
Yeah.
So since then, his parents have played the national anthem and shown him recordings of the flag-raising ceremonies whenever he was crying to make him stop. Fair fucks, you're a parent, you do what you need to.
Yeah.
As he grew up, he wanted to enact that ceremony in his own living room. So his parents bought him a uniform, a flag, and a pulley system. They didn't know where to get any of that, so they got stuff from an army surplus market, the flag from flag seller, and the pulley system from construction supplies. And now he has got fame, and he's this... He looks like a tiny little Chinese soldier.
Wow.
And he says, I want to raise the flag at Tiananmen Square in Beijing. Oh, someone's not had a history lesson. followed by, I want to run over a student with a tank. So
got him a little Tonka truck to go with. Yeah.
I don't want to besmirch the honour of a nine-year-old that I have never met, but I'm going to show you lads a photo of him, and I think he looks like the future chairman of the Chinese Communist Party for 2050.
Oh, wow, that's a look.
That's quite a uniform.
It really is.
I'm slightly disappointed it's such a small flagpole, though. I was hoping, like, he lives in a block of flats. They've had to, like, saw a hole up several floors.
Like a fireman's pole.
You're sitting in there watching TV of night and just the Chinese flag just comes up three floors across the ceiling.
Oh, someone's crying again. Yeah. Before we go, Ari, where can people find you and what can they find you doing when they get there?
Well, when I'm in London, they tend to find me at the Soho Theatre.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully I will be returning many, many times.
And you're on Twitter and all the usual places?
Yes, yes. I'm on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. Fairly inactive at the moment. You might see some very old posts there that have nothing to do with comedy. But please, follow me. It's the new rage, apparently.
Yeah. Smashing stuff. We're all off to play Ibis Sport and make them so happy by beating them. Until next time, goodbye.
Bye.